Thank you, Aaron. Good morning. Welcome to all of you this morning. Hope everyone's having a good morning. I got off of shift this morning. I had overtime yesterday, so I worked the last 3 days. All 3 nights we got up, but yesterday I was able to get a nap during the day, and I woke up early this morning, felt wonderful, went out, got a cup of coffee, and sat out in front of my station and kind of finished some thoughts that I've been thinking about this week. It was a beautiful morning, and I'm really happy to be able to be here. I'm grateful for the many blessings that God gives me. I'm thankful for the fact that that throughout my week that I have learned to hear him when I read or I see something or I'm driving and contemplating, that there are thoughts that the Lord impresses on my mind. And like most ministry, very rarely is it anything that's not for myself to really consider and then present. And this week I've been thinking, and I started taking some notes earlier in the week, and I've been kind of writing notes down and thoughts down and things all week long as I've been contemplating the time that I was able to share with you here this morning. And so I have a topic that I want to talk about today, and this is a topic that you probably hear a lot. And maybe I'm going to talk about it just a little bit different today, but it's this topic of love. And of course, we hear love all the time. But I was thinking about it this week and some things that were bouncing around in my mind, some things that I was listening to and reading. And so I want to just start, and I want to tell you guys that I love red vines. That's one of the gifts that my kids know they can always give me is red vines. And I held myself back for Father's Day. I don't know if it was Zane. I think it probably was. Got me a bucket of red vines. And I don't know if any of you guys are red vine eaters, but it used to be that you could buy a 5-pound bucket, and then they reduced it down to a 3-pound bucket, which is very frustrating. But they found a 5-pound bucket, which was even better. It was a Father's Day gift, and I really controlled myself. I think I finally ate the last one in August. I tried to really control, because I can sit down and I can just eat red vines like crazy, because I love red vines. I love playing music. You all know that. I love playing the guitar. I love playing various instruments. I love when we come together and we sing. I love doing that. It's something that I look forward to and that I want to participate in, and I love playing music. I love my children. 4 kids. I love each one of them. Each one of them is different. Each one of them requires something different from me. Each one of them is unique. Each one of them has their own strengths, their own weaknesses. Every one of them, though, I love. I can't imagine my life without my children. I can't imagine not having them in my house. I realize the day will come when they'll start leaving, and you know. But I love my children. I enjoy being around my family. I love mountains. I love mountains. I like to go up to the mountains. I like to hike mountains. I don't like the Midwest because there are not mountains. Nothing against the Midwest. I just don't like flat. I like mountains. I enjoy staring at mountains. I like going hunting and looking at mountains through my binoculars. I like looking at a mountain and looking at all the different ways I might climb it and think about that, you know. And as I've done that in the past, stop for a minute and think, I'm probably the only person who's ever stood right here before. I love mountains. I love my Makita track saw. Track saw is something, it's a track that you put down and clamp it on a long piece of wood, and it's a saw that plunges down a certain depth and it cuts a perfectly straight line. I love my Makita track saw. I look for, before I was super busy this year with class and everything, I look for reasons to use it. I love my track saw. It's probably one of the best investments I've ever made. I love that. I love fighting fire as a firefighter. I was working yesterday. I was moved up. I was an engineer. I was driving yesterday, and we got a fire, just a little fire. It wasn't even a great fire. It was someone lit up a port-a-john. And I was irritated that instead of going and putting water on it, I got to sit here at a pump panel and give them water and do all that stuff because it's fun. It's enjoyable. I like going into a house that's on fire. I like all of the challenges that I love fighting fire. I love pizza with a thick crust. I don't like thin crust pizza. If I want a quesadilla, I'll make a quesadilla. I like thick crust pizza. I like big, thick crust. I don't like Papa John's pizza for how it tastes, but they always make sure they have big, puffy crust, and I love thick crust pizza. I love it. I will go to it all the time. I just said 6 or 7, 8 things right there, and every time I use this word love. And throughout our society, you see this word love is used to describe everything, from food to vehicles, from music, hairstyles. I get people all the time that, man, I love your mustache. I love it. Okay. I love my mustache too. Well, the word love is used to describe and to be a part of talking about things that are clearly bad to things that are clearly good morally. And in our society, we use the word so much that it actually probably contains really no meaning whatsoever. And even all of the synonyms and things for love we use all the time. So it really doesn't have any meaning. You watch a commercial and they'll say things like, you know, get ready to fall in love with this resort. Or you're going to become enchanted with this meal. Or you're going to adore this set of shoes. All of these things that we would associate with love, and yet it becomes empty because we use that word so much. Love is one of these words that has been so overused, and it's attached to so many things that it bears very little weight. When I was a younger man and was very immature in my understanding in relationships, I would throw the word love around a lot. And in my immaturity, what I thought was, you know, this affection that I had or this attraction, I wanted to put a title to it. And so I said, well, it's love. It's got to be love because it's a different attraction than I have anywhere else. And, you know, the older I got and the more I realized it, the more I understood that I was really attributing something. I was giving a word that meant a whole lot more than what it actually was in me, what my actual feelings were. We a lot of times use that word love so much for so many things that it's essentially useless. For instance, I say that I love my chickens. I love my chickens. I also say I love my wife. So how do we differentiate the way I feel about my chickens from my wife? It's an interesting thought. We use the same word. And what really bears the weight of that word is the actions that are associated with it. And we can recognize what love is through the actions that it compels us to do, through the pursuits that it causes us to pursue, through the differences in action that it brings in us, through the cautiousness that we take in conversation, for the consideration that we take in buying a gift. And I think it's important that we remember that. We are called to love God. Not love like I love my chickens. It's not the same thing. My chickens are valuable. They're entertaining to me. I get a kick out of them. I used to have a chicken. We've gone through a lot of chickens. I used to have a chicken who, when I'd be in my shop running things on my table saw, she would come and fly up and sit on the table saw and watch what I'm doing. I never had a dog that would do that. I had a chicken that would do that. You know, love is one of those things that for love to actually be love, it has to be free. It has to be free. We might be tempted, especially if you're a young person, maybe if you're a young lady or you're a young man trying to impress a young lady, to think that we can help to show someone how we feel about them because we're going to buy them gifts, things. Well, I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you flowers and all of that. And yet, it's important that we realize that love has to be free. It can't be purchased by gifts because, well, gifts can be taken away or cease to come. If you and your relationships, your friendship or your romantic relationship, if it's how often your husband brings you flowers that is the mark for love in your mind, unfortunately, we've missed the boat. Hopefully, there's other things that you see. But you know, one of these things is important is love has to be free. No strings attached. It can't be by force. To hold a gun to someone's head and say, you will tell me you love me and you will love me, will never be true. Love that is based on a threat is not actually love. Doesn't work. And this is why, you know, when we talk about in the spiritual sense, when we talk about in our relationship with Christ, keeping the commandments out of obligation doesn't work. It's not enough. Because I'm afraid of judgment, that's why I'm obedient, is not the crux of a commandment. It's not why we're called to love Christ, nor is it the measure by which we love Him. I love Christ because I do X, Y, and Z. Gifts can be changed, taken away, manipulated. Force can come or go. Love comes because it's freely given. Following Christ because of the Word and not because you desire a meaningful relationship with Him cannot work. The commandments, the Word of Christ teaches us how to build a relationship with Him, but the commandments themselves are not love. Doing it because it's commanded is not love. The commandment itself, when I choose not to steal, is not actually love. The love is shown and expressed when, because of my desire to have this meaningful relationship with Christ, I change of my own free will to not do what my heart is inclined to do. That's love. Because of the relationship and the desire I want to have with Him. God's Word, the commandments of Christ, they are there because it shows us Christ's heart, His values, His desires. So let's turn to Matthew chapter 23. And today, by the time I finish, all I want to do is I want to call you to a greater love for Christ. And to think about what it means. And to think about what you do every day and what motivates you and why. And I want you to think about a relationship. It's a lot easier oftentimes to think about it in terms of a human relationship, and so we'll talk about it like that. But ultimately, talking about this relationship that you have with Christ. And I think it's important that we don't get tied up too much. You know, one of these things that's really strange, and I listen to podcasts and things like that, and you know, and these big manly men try to talk about love for Christ, and they say it's just a weird thing because men, we don't want to talk about a romantic or a deep love for another man or for Christ, but I want us to not even look at that. I want to talk about this relationship, this love, this connection with the Creator of your soul, the one who has the greatest desires, the furthest outlook, the deepest concern, who's willing to do the very most for you. That's what I want us to think about. So in Matthew chapter 23, Christ is here talking, and he's talking to all these people who are there, and he's got these continual conflicts with the Pharisees, with the wise men of the time, the guys who spent their time studying the Old Testament and studying the law and all that, and they had it down to a science. They knew exactly what to do. You can walk this far on this certain day. You can carry this much weight. You can do this. You cannot do that. All of these things. And they were more than happy to share it. And they would, you know, Christ made these statements. You know, they do these things, and they sit in the very utmost things, and they're perfectly put together and all of that. They just want to be seen. And so I'm going to read here in Matthew 23, verses 23 through 28. He says, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise, and come and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done, and not to leave the other undone. You blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within are full of extortion and excesses. Thou blind Pharisees, cleanse first that which is within the cup and the platter, that the outside may then be clean also. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you're like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but within are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, and yet within are full of hypocrisy and iniquity." You know, Christ makes some of these statements, and, you know, Easton and I, the past two, three weeks, we've been searching for a car for him. And so when you're looking for a vehicle now, you get on the computer, on your phone, whatever, and you go to Facebook Marketplace or OfferUp or whatever, and you're searching for it, and he and I both mentioned several times how much different the picture looked than when we got into that vehicle. Didn't look the same. Even the vehicle he bought, which is very nice, you know, the picture is not exactly what it is. It's a good vehicle, it's nice for him, but you know, the picture wasn't exactly what it is. You know, and Christ is making this statement, and he's talking to the Pharisees, these men who they've got it all memorized. This is the love of God. You do this and this to show. This is what's valuable to him. This is how we serve him. And Christ is saying, you're doing the outside things, but your heart, you're not doing it because of your love for me. This is the most important thing. It'd be better if you didn't give tithe of mint and of anise and all of these things, and instead, you just gave your heart. Where if you gave, you know, just a small bit, like we read in there, where there was the time where Christ was looking, and this old woman came and she threw in two pennies, two mites, just a little bit. And he called out and he said, "Look at all these guys, man, they're throwing in, they've got all this money, they're writing gigantic checks, throwing it in for tithing, and yet this lady went and dug to the very bottom of her purse and found the only two things she had. And she gave it. Because it was what was in her heart that was the most important. It's the relationship that you have with Christ. And you, throughout your life, it grows. Maybe it's simple and it's new now. But throughout your life, you know, you see this relationship you have with Christ should compel you to do things. It should compel you to live differently. It should compel you to search your heart for what separates you. To look at, am I doing this because it's what I think is right, or is it, am I doing it because this is what the Lord whom I love wants of me? I want to turn to Psalm 73. And here in Psalm 73, I'm going to read verses 25 and 26. In this psalm it says this, "Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee. My flesh and my heart faileth, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." You know, I have a note in here that as I was reading this and I was contemplating this verse this morning, you know, I thought these two verses to me is very similar to one of the vows we make when we get married. One of these common things, at least throughout kind of tradition, and you're repeating the vows, it says, you know, that you're going to love this person for better or for worse. sickness and health. You know, in this psalm, he makes this statement. Says, is there anybody else who fills my needs other than Christ? Anyone else in heaven? Is there any on the earth that can fill my needs other than Christ? In 26, as my flesh and my heart fail, everything is crashing down. I have no health. I have no future. My possessions, all of that is gone. But God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. The love that I have for Christ and that He has for me is sufficient if all else is gone. Is enough if all else is gone. This is what we should be considering in our life. And, you know, I don't expect somebody who is just beginning a walk with Christ to have this particular view. But as you grow in your relationship with Christ, it's very similar with your relationship. In my relationship with my wife, we've realized that we need very little. Very little. We face problems together and with God, and we're good. We need far less than what we have. We've done it. Together, we've been able to overcome many things with the help of Christ. But that comes because both of us have realized first that my true love, Jesus Christ, is the strength of my heart. And there's none on earth that can fill the void in me except for Christ. None other that can answer questions, can give me peace, direction, and guidance, hope for the future than Christ. Well, I want you to think about in your life, what does love for Christ compel you to do? I think about this, we consider this, you know, that here's the truth of the matter. Unfortunately, women, I hate to say this, but you guys are complicated. You're complicated. Men need very little. Some of us are probably a little bit more complicated than others, but for the most part, if I've got food, a place to sleep, something to put on, and something to keep me a little bit busy, I'm probably pretty satisfied. It would be nice, we've always talked about this, if there was a manual on how to make our relationship good so we could understand our wife. My wife is very even keel. I'm blessed. There's a lot of friends that I know whose wives are a little bit more complicated. That's not an insult or anything. It's everybody's a little bit different. My wife is very even keel. Even when she was pregnant, hormones going all over the place, my wife was very even keel. Hear some of these stories about some pregnancy things and all that. My wife was so easy, so good. But every day, maybe not every single day, but throughout the almost 19 years we've been married, I continue to learn new things about her. I continue to learn. Maybe she learns new things about me. Maybe not, I don't know. But what does your love for Christ compel you to do? My love for my wife compels me to continue to get to know her. I have never in any relationship that I have had, whether with my wife or with a friend or anything, said, you know, I'd like to get to know this person less. It's preposterous. It's never been a relationship, a friendship, anything I've had where I didn't say, well, I'd like to know, it wasn't in my heart or my mind, I want to know this person more. I have a very good friend. We talk every once in a while, every couple times a month. We hunt together, we do all that, and we've known each other for, goodness, almost 20 years now on the police department, and we've been best friends and have done a lot together, been through a lot together, and I love visiting with him because I learn more and more about him. And this is something that is probably really difficult for us. So it's easy for me to want to know more about my wife because I see her every single day. Well, almost every day, unless I'm at work. I'm around her, I share a house with her, I share children with her, finances, we make decisions together and all that. It's probably a little bit more difficult because I'm not seeing Christ every day, though I can interact with him every day if I choose. But what I want us to think about, one of these things I want you to consider today is what does your love for Christ, if you have love for Christ, what does it compel you to do? Does it compel you to spend every day learning a little bit more about him and that he would learn a little more about you? This is something that I think is really interesting about the gospel. We read these things where it talks about making confession to the Lord and all that, and we recognize he already knows everything, but there's something about us verbalizing it to God that's important. He knows about us because I tell him about myself. One of the things, if you want to have a better relationship, a closer relationship, a stronger relationship, one of the things that grows the tightest, strongest bonds is if you allow yourself to be vulnerable with that other person. You share those things that if that other person were to tell someone else, it would really crush you. You trust somebody with something of yourself that is precious and that is maybe in some ways a little humiliating. Like when we come to the Lord and we tell him our faults. And we share with him our hopes and our desires. When we go to the Lord in prayer and we confess this person that we are and we allow that relationship with the Lord to grow. And the Lord, through his word, through interaction of prayer and the Spirit, through the scripture and understanding that you're given, through songs that you hear, all of these things shows himself to you and causes your relationship to grow. I want to turn to the book of John. I want to read verses in chapter 14, John chapter 14. Very, very familiar verses here. There is no user manual for me to understand all the inner workings of my wife, but there is one for Christ. And the crux of it is the word that we're talking about today, the concept, it's love. And what that feeling, what that bond that you have with him compels you to do. Compels you to do. And so here in John chapter 14, verses 15 through 17, Christ says, "If you love me, keep my commandments." And you know, that's not such a strange thing. Because you don't have a friendship, you don't have a relationship where there are not ground rules of what makes a good relationship. You don't have that. There is an understanding between friends. I have an understanding with my friends. There are things that we will and will not do to each other. We're not going to lie. We're not going to take advantage of each other. We're going to consider the other person before we make decisions, if it might affect them. All these things. You know, Christ is saying the same thing. If you love me, keep my commandments. Know what it is. What is it that would hurt me? Well, a lot of times we don't think about that because we, you know, and we've heard this a lot of times. You know, people, how many people have said, well, you know, the gospel, the Christianity, the Bible, all that, it's these hard, do this, don't do that, as if it's emotionless. But this is full of emotion. Christ came and he's laid all these things out. He says, please don't lie to me. Don't lie to me. It crushes me when you lie to me. Please don't give your heart to someone else. It crushes me when you do that. Please don't take advantage of the other people I love. It crushes me when you do that. You know, Christ, that's what his commandments are. They're given and they're shared with deep emotion. And we need to be cautious that we don't boil it down to simple do this and don't do that and forget the fact that Christ is telling us this is what's in my heart. This is what's in my heart. So if you love me, keep my commandments. And I'll pray the Father, and he'll give you another comforter that he might abide with you all forever. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But you know him, for he'll be in you and dwell in you. You know, Christ's word helps us to know him, and the Spirit is this interaction of love between you and him. It's the interaction of love. It's the feeling of love, the assurance of his presence. So it pricks your heart when you're going to do something and says, that's going to hurt him. It's going to hurt him. Consider these things. You know, when you come here week by week and you hear the ministry talk about all these things, the word of Christ, he's laying his emotions out before you. It's not emotionless, cold, feelingless, do this and don't do that. No, it's Christ saying, this is what's important to me. Love me. Love me. A relationship of love, at its very core, has got to have truth. You cannot love somebody, nor can they love you, if there is not truth between the two of you. Lies are a web. They're easy to get stuck in. There's a danger with lies. Lies always grow. And there's an even bigger danger, is that eventually you begin to believe them. And in order to get out of that web, you have to make a confession and you have to share. To be completely honest, open, and truthful. That's in any relationship you have. Any relationship that has a foundation of lies or that is an accumulation of lies will never work out. For someone to truly love you, they have to know all of you. When I counsel with people and prepare them for marriage to conduct their wedding ceremony, I have this conversation with them and say, you don't have to do this with me present. I don't have to be there. I don't want to be there. But the two of you need to sit down and share absolutely everything. Everything. No surprises. No lies. Everything's got to be open. Because this person has to be able to choose you for the dirtiest, filthiest, most terrible, vulgar person that you are. If they choose you because of that, it's probably because there's love. And this is, you know, Christ. This is Christ. Of course, he has this tremendous love because we're his children. We've created him. But what he wants from us is for us to give him everything, to share everything, nothing hidden. There's a statement that was made, oh goodness, maybe it was in the early 1920s, something like that, a Supreme Court justice who made this statement that said, sunlight is the best disinfectant. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. You get it out there, it's not hidden anymore. You throw out that thing, you share that failure with this other person, with your friend, with your spouse, with God, and now they choose what to do with it, but you're cleared of it. It's out there. This beautiful thing, and one of these reasons why we ought to love Christ is because he's not concerned about how dirty, filthy I am, so long as I tell him that I am and I ask him to help me through it. That's what he's concerned about. Truth serves the harmony of a relationship. Truth brings together. Lies are never able to bring something together, ever. Well, I have another thing here, another point here, is just as I was thinking about all this and thinking about truth, and there's this thing I was listening to and I thought it was a very interesting statement. And it says, truth can be a lie if it's used as a weapon. An interesting thing to think, huh? So we could do that. I could point out a true fault of my wife, something that is actually true, and share something that she does and use it to beat her down with if I chose to. We can do this, and a lot of times we do it against each other. This relationship we have with Christ is beautiful because he never does that. His word shows us our faults to the intent that we're able to overcome. Truth serves love. And I want to turn to Ephesians chapter 5. And read here in this very familiar scripture, Ephesians chapter 5, I'm going to read 25 through 30. It says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man hath ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are the members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. I've said this many times. I've said it over and over again. I'll continue to say it. My relationship with my wife is wonderful, to the point that it's difficult for me to see us as a separate entity. It's a strange way of thinking.
but it's difficult for me to see us as separate. And this is one of these things that Christ, as he's sharing his heart to us, says, this is what I want you to have. You know, if you are in a relationship, if you are married, says, I want you to think of it that you guys are so together. It makes this statement that no man ever hates his own body, but he nourishes it and cherishes it. You know, most of us are going to make sure that we have food, that we're taken care of if we're injured, we've got clothes on and all that. And if you're in a relationship and you're one with somebody, it extends to them as well. Christ uses truth to serve his love for us. It says here in verse 20, 25 and 26 that Christ, he loved the church, he gave himself for it, and he wants to sanctify and cleanse it, the washing of water by the word. Because he's looking for verse 27, a glorious church, a beautiful church without blemish. Christ wants us in our relationship with him, is he's looking to call us higher, always to call us higher, to lift us up, to call us higher. You know, in our relationship with Christ, he's looking to help us, to strengthen us, to take a look at where we're weak and to help to make us strong. Isaiah chapter 61, I'm going to read verse 10. Isaiah 61, verse 10, it says, I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My soul shall be joyful in my God, for he's clothed me with garments of salvation and covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decked himself with ornaments, and as a bride adorneth herself with jewels. You know, the Lord wants us to be beautiful. He doesn't want us to be dirty. He explains and he shares and convicts us through his word, through the foolishness of preaching, through prayer and his intercession with your heart by his Holy Spirit where we're dirty because of his love for us. Christ is looking for a clean companion. A washing machine cleans, but we have to bring our clothes to it. Christ wants us to come and bring everything that's filthy. Where you failed, where you're weak, where you struggle, where you wish you could do differently, where you're in the bonds of sin, where you have these things you can't overcome, and bring it to him. Pour it out to him. Tell him all of these things. Just as, you know, in your relationship, you come to this person and you tell them, this is where I'm weak, can you help me? This is what I'm struggling with. I hope in your relationships that you have these conversations. That you have it with your wife, with your husband, with your friend, with your best friend, with your boss at work. This is where I'm not doing what I wish to do. Will you help me? And this is also what we should do with Christ. Why? Because his desire is to wash us with water by his word, to bless us and strengthen us. Well, there is a truth about us, and acknowledging these things helps us to come into harmony with Christ. It makes our relationship with him more perfect. One of these first things, and this is very true for me, is that we as humans make very bad choices. We make poor choices. We are influenced by things. We make rash decisions. We don't have a view for the future as we ought to. Up at the ranch, we had a conversation. We were talking in a study, and we talked a little bit about sin, and I made the observation that a lot of times we sin because there's something missing within us. And something which appears to be good, or something which might make us feel good for a short time, we allow it to come in, but it never can fully fulfill us. We make poor choices. And one of these things for our relationship to grow with Christ, I believe, is that we need to acknowledge these things. So I want to just read quickly here in Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 9 through 10. It says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? You know, our heart is attached. It's part of our humanity, the desires that we have. Humans, we don't make good decisions. We tend to look at the short term and not the long term. We don't have a vision of the future as we ought to, and because of that, we make decisions which fulfill those short term goals and not looking with the same view as the Lord does. In any relationship you have, just as the relationship I have with my wife, you know, we sit down every once in a while and we start talking about the future. Maybe we're going to talk a month ahead, a year ahead. Where are we going to be in a couple years? I'm at the point now where we have this conversation a couple times. I'm not ready to retire, but it's a possibility soon. What does it look like? These are decisions that we have to make and that we have to look and we have to be confessing our lack of ability to understand, to make these good decisions, confessing it to the Lord, be vulnerable in this. This is where what I'm thinking, this, but I don't know what I'm doing. And I need you to guide me because you love me and I love you. I want to fulfill what you want. Verse 10 says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. So when you come to me, I'm already looking at your heart and looking to see what it is. What are your motivations? We can take everything to the Lord and lay it before Him. And He's looking. And He wants to bless us. He wants to be with us. Why? Because He has a tremendous love for us. We are inclined to trouble. We read here, maybe I won't go there to right now, but you know, we read in the theme up at the ranch was the Psalm of Nephi in chapter 3 of 2 Nephi. And he just kind of lays out what he's thinking and what he's feeling. And he makes this statement that says, even though I've got this great relationship with God, He's been with me, He's helped me, He's strengthened me, I make bad decisions because my life is full of trouble and I'm inclined to trouble. And so in our relationship with Christ, we need to be looking to Him to guide us day by day, to help us to have a clear understanding, to help us, I've said it several times, to look beyond, to not be looking at the short term, but to be looking farther. A real relationship, a true relationship, one that's built on love, is looking for the future because it intends to be together for a long time. It intends to, you know, marriage, we shouldn't be planning marriage for a couple years, but instead you should be attending marriage like I think my grandparents now have the longest marriage in this church, in our local here at 67 years, Grandma. That didn't happen because they said, well, we'll give it a go for a year. We are inadequate because we lack understanding, but God wants to give us clear understanding. I want to turn to Mosiah chapter 5. And I'm going to read verse 84 and 85. And this is, Ammon had gone to a place and had visited with the king there, and this is after this conversation and revealing of God's word, this king makes this statement. He says, oh, how, verse 84 and 85, oh, how marvelous are the works of the Lord, and how long doth He suffer with His people, and how blind and impenetrable are the understandings of the children of men, for they will not seek wisdom, neither do they desire that she should rule over them. You know, he makes this statement that the Lord, He wants to lead us and guide us, give us clarity and understanding. But we have to get past our own selves to let the Lord open our eyes and to penetrate our thoughts. And that only comes when we make these efforts. I asked you that question. What does your love for Christ compel you to do? Does it compel you to get to know Him more? To consider His word, to ask Him His opinion, to be around His people, to spend time with Him. One of these things we do is we allow ourselves to be buried with sin. But Christ promises is that He wants to release us from it. He wants to cleanse and purify us because the way He views His relationship, His love with you, is He wants you to be clean and pure because you're precious to Him. He's accepted us when we show Him who we are and we allow Him to bring us higher. True love calls us higher. And I want you to think about that in your relationships. If you have a relationship that is based on love, it will call you higher. Always call you higher. It won't call you to secrecy. It won't call you to be alone. It won't call you to sin. It will call you higher. And our love for Christ is shown in how we act day by day. Does He call us higher? I have a couple more things I just want to touch here real quick. I'm probably going to come to a close here quickly. I just have a bunch of notes here, things. But I want us to think this. I made this mention about a relationship and about a relationship that's based on love. The plan is to make it go the entire distance. That should be the plan. I don't have a friendship in my life that I ever was like, well, I'd probably be friends with this guy for a week, for a year. It's always been, this is my friend, and I want to have this relationship in my marriage, anything that I have. You know, when the Lord has a future that He desires in His relationship with you, I want to turn to Messiah chapter 2. In verse 21 through 23, it says, "Humble yourselves even in the depths of humility and call on the name of the Lord daily, standing steadfastly in the faith of that which is to come, which is spoken by the mouth of the angel. Behold, I say unto you that if you do this, you shall always rejoice and be filled with the love of God and retain a remission of your sins, and you shall grow in the knowledge of the glory of Him that created you, or in the knowledge of that which is just and true." You know, God has plans for you. He has plans for you. He has plans for everyone, and that is His plan of salvation and eternity with Him. But He has plans for you, for your relationship, with where He wants you to be and what He wants you to do, what He wants you to grow into and what He hopes that you'd be like. You know, here King Benjamin says, "Be humble and ask the Lord to keep you humble, to be gracious, to be loving." And it says, "And stand in faith of the things that are to come." The promises of God. Stand in faith of that. That God's promises are extended because of His love for you, given with deep emotion. Not a cold promise, not just words, but His heart desires. To be with you. His heart desires to be present with you. I've mentioned that I had listened to a podcast, and whether all of it's completely true or not, I don't know, but it's a man who'd spent years interviewing people who had near-death experiences. They'd experienced the other side, and got people who were declared clinically dead, and he interviewed them and chronicled their experiences and all that. You know, one of these things that you find as he's relaying these stories of people who had an interaction with who they termed to be Christ, a God of light and of love, made this statement that, you know, one of these people, if I remember it rightly, it was in this place, there was all these people everywhere, but Christ was there with me. And he said it was like there was nobody else around. It's just us. It's just us. This is the relationship that Christ wants with you. He wants to be with you, to hold you, to guide you. And it's not strange. It's beautiful. It's really what love should compel you to do, to want to be with each other, to want to strengthen, encourage, guide each other. And this is Christ for you. This is His offer for you. I'm going to read I'm gonna jump and just make a statement here, and then I'm gonna read one last scripture. Maybe two last scriptures. One of these things that helps to grow love is when you share experiences together. You share experiences together. We go on trips. We go to dinner. Do all of these things because it helps to grow our love. Jordan Peterson. I was listening to a podcast of his, and he made this thing, as he said, I've realized that of all my years of counseling people with marriage issues, he said, I realize that they need to be talking to each other for at least 90 minutes a week in order to make sure that relationship is moving forward the way it ought to be. It's an interesting thing if you think about it. If he says, you know, if you're not talking for 90 minutes a week, if there's not an interaction between the two of you, and at some point in there you guys are talking about the important things, the direction of your family, the things that are going on, hey, what's our finances look like, what's your dreams, what do you like, hey, are we happy, is everything good? If you're not doing these things, he says, it really, he says, I've just kind of figured it out, that that's kind of the, if you shoot for that, that's really where it ought to be. And I thought about that. Of course, I don't spend 90 minutes a week in prayer. But for the most part, I probably spend 90 minutes a week between prayer and church, listening to music maybe, talking to other people about things that actually matter. Communication is a shared experience. Your communication with the Lord, with Jesus Christ, praying, considering Him, grows this relationship and grows your love, makes it stronger. The Lord doesn't need anything. Christ needs nothing. But His heart is full of a tremendous desire to be with you. In Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, He says, I stand at the door and knock. If you open the door, I will come into you and we will have communion with each other. We'll eat together. We'll talk together. Christ was lamenting over Jerusalem, all these people who had seen Him do such amazing things, and they wouldn't accept of Him. And He said, I wanted for you to come and so I could protect you, just like a hen gathers their chicks underneath of them, keeps them warm, makes sure they're fed, takes them to water, cares for them. The Lord wants these shared experiences with you. 90 minutes, I mean, that's a lot. But maybe you can start somewhere. Maybe you start by making this commitment that every day, before I swing my legs out of bed, I'm going to pray. And we start to grow that relationship even more. And when we put efforts into a relationship with someone who we have a desire to be with, when that feeling within us, that love compels us, we grow closer and closer, and it's not hard to spend more time together. It's not difficult. I want to just close here. Let me see which of these scriptures I want to close with. I'm going to read two to close. Mosiah chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. This king, this leader, this spiritual leader is talking to his people about having this relationship with Christ. And he makes this statement. He says, I say unto you, a word that you should remember to retain the name written always in your hearts, that you're not found on the left hand of God, but that you hear and know the voice by which you shall be called, and also the name by which He shall call you. For how knoweth a man the master which he hath not served, which is a stranger unto him, and is far from the thoughts and the intents of his heart? You know, he makes this statement. He says, I want you to think about who it is you have a relationship with. In our human lives, when two people get married, typically one person takes the name of the other and is willing to put that name upon them. And, you know, one of these things that we talk about a lot, and, you know, I just finished up doing a pre-academy with a bunch of these firefighters that are now in an academy right now. And one of these things I talked to them about, and Logan's heard me say this a million times, and I learned it from people in my life and my uncle and all of these, is that a name is precious. A name is precious. And when you have a name, you should consider it to be valuable and want to protect it, have it to be highly thought of. And when someone hears the name Adam Yates, you know, I thought about that with work. I know everybody's not going to like me. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. I get it. I understand that there are some people, my personality and all that doesn't mesh, but you know, I try to conduct myself in a way so that if I get moved to a station or I show up on overtime and someone says, well, who's coming here today? Oh, it's Yates, he's coming. They might not be like, well, that's great, I want to talk to him all day. They'd be like, you know what? I trust him. He can do this job. He'll take care of me. A name is important. Your love for Christ, He's offered you His name. What does that compel you to do? Well, Christ is thinking about you. And He wants you to think about Him. This verse here, it says that if someone's a stranger, you don't actually know who they are. We can't say that we love Christ if we don't have and we haven't built any relationship. If you're not praying, if you're not listening when you come to church, if you're not every once in a while opening your scriptures to see what is in His heart for me, you don't really know Him. And how can you uphold His name? So you know, He's not supposed to be far from our thoughts and the intents of our heart. And I want to close here just in Jeremiah 29. The Lord says, I know the thoughts that I think towards you. He's thinking about us. He's looking forward to the day when there is not a separation of humanity and eternity. So He's looking forward to. I know the thoughts I think towards you. Individualized for every one of you. You're not a random number. You were created intentionally. And He loves you. Thoughts of peace, not of evil, to give you an expected end. So I hope I've given you some things to think about, things that you would consider. I probably had another hour's worth of notes here, but I think this is a good place to draw this to a close. I'm just going to ask that today as you go from here, maybe tonight as you pray, maybe tomorrow if you have a few moments that you think about it, what does your love for Christ compel you to do? Do you have that love? What do you do to have it more? Does it change you? Has it made you different? Has it made you make different decisions in your life? Are there things you need to do differently? 90 minutes is a lot, but can you give Him something? Are you looking to do that? Do you want it? Do you want to get closer? These are important things that follower of Christ should be doing. So I'm going to hope that you guys consider those things. I hope that you took something from this message this morning, and I thank you all for your time and attention.